Good evening. Welcome again to the 1955 Kailua Study Group. This is Chapter 26, Melchizedek, the Babe, an Act of Devotion. And this chapter is a little different than the other chapters we've had so far. Joel seems to go in a new direction, and yet it also fits in with what we've been studying. And if we were to sum up this entire chapter, we would say that Christ is not the man or the woman. Christ is the consciousness which appears as a man or a woman. He starts us off with remembering and reviewing the birth of the Christ, the birth of the babe. He says, what was it that drew unto the babe the wise men, the visitors, the worshippers? Something that the babe represented, something that was present in the babe, and we call that the Christ. It wasn't the babe itself, it was the Christ. There must be a presence and a power that humans could never explain, that humans could never see. Only those gifted with wwisdom, spiritual discernment would know or be drawn. You see, you could bring 10 people into, let's say, one of Joel Goldsmith's classes, and one may feel something very deeply emanating through Joel. Others will hear some interesting principles that just might work if they try them. And still others will be bored to death. It's not the speaker. It's not the one giving the class or the lecture. It's the spiritual discernment of those that come to the class. It's the spiritual discernment of the wise men that knew something was happening in that manger. And I noticed here on the next page, he has a couple of interesting observations. He says, no one need ever fear the Christ, and yet wherever it even claims to appear, those in authority tremble in fear and try to do away with it. And I guess we all are pretty well educated, and we know that, number one, wherever the Christ appears, it's going to be teaching that you need to die daily. And second, it's going to be setting you free and showing you that you don't need to belong to any organization, any ritual or dogma. And so those that have set all that up are going to tremble in fear. Now, the Christ, he says, isn't a man or a woman. The Christ is a divine state of consciousness, which appears on earth as a man or a woman. So you see, Jesus was not the Christ. Christ was appearing on earth as Jesus. Jesus, when he overcame the world, when he said, I have overcome the world, that means that he had died daily to the point where Christ consciousness was living him. Here he says, there is no one on the face of the globe and never has been so lowly in any way that they have not in some measure shown forth the Christ. Everyone. There is no one, there has never been a soul on the face of the globe who is not in some measure, in some degree, at some time, shown forth the nature of the Christ in some experience. Now, I wrote in the margin a few names, because if this is true, no one on the face of the globe has never been so lowly that they didn't show forth the Christ in some experience. It begs the question, what about Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, Adolf Hitler, Osama bin Laden, George W. Bush? Do you know we have to get to the place where we can see and feel with that spiritual discernment, look behind these personalities we have just named to that indwelling Christ? Well, when Christ looks, Christ sees Christ and nothing else. That's why Christ could say, "What did hinder you? I don't see what your problem is. Come on, get up. Take up your bed and walk." Christhood itself is the fullness of that transcendental quality, character, nature. And those who, like the Master, attain it in its fullness are, of course, recognized as Messiahs, Saviors, or spiritual revelators. But that which makes them a Messiah or a revelator is the fact that they wholly and fully perceive that Christhood is the reality of individual you and me. Only in the degree that they perceive the universal nature of Christhood would they represent the full embodiment of the Christ. And so that's the long way of saying, Christ sees only the Christ. Christhood is recognized in an individual who comes to earth to reveal your Christhood, to enable you and me to bring forth more of that than we are at any moment doing. And so the Savior isn't a man. The Savior is that state of consciousness. That quality in its full development says, you can go and do likewise, because this that I am showing forth is the Father within, but it is your Father and my Father. Now, I like this paragraph here, and I'll tell you why. It says, now you notice that the wise men brought gifts. Oh, and it is said that the birds sang, and the angels flew about, and the stars sang in the skies. All manner of spiritual phenomena took place at this birth of the Christ. So it has ever been, so it will always be. That at the moment of the Christ appearing, as your individual consciousness, at the moment that you transcend your ordinary human sense of I and realize the nature of the Christ as your being and relax your personal effort, that wise men will come bringing you gifts and songs will be sung and praises be given. Now, the reason why I like that paragraph is because don't you see in each of your individual meditations when you reach that place where you are relaxing from personal effort and you commune with the Christ and you feel it, you sense it, don't you see that this is telling you figuratively that wise men will come bringing you gifts, songs will be sung, and praises be given? In other words, what you realize within is demonstrated without. When you have this experience within your meditation, when you relax your personal effort and realize the nature of Christ as your being and rest in it, it always manifests. And so you can look for gifts out of the blue. You can look for harmony. You can look for peace. You can look for love coming to you from the universe. But don't you also see it's not coming to you? Just as it's not coming to the babe, it's coming to the Christ. Don't you see that when Joel tells us, my own shall come unto me, is not talking about a human being? My own shall come unto me is talking about Christ? That's what he's talking about. So when you relax your personal efforts and realize the nature of the Christ as your being, rest in that, and then all this love comes to you, well, step aside a little bit. It's coming to that Christ within. You just happen to be there, so you're able to be a witness and enjoy it. It makes no difference to the world. It will offer itself wherever Christhood appears. And you know, you can keep your finger on your lips, and it will still work. It will still work. I had this experience, and I know one of you remembers this story. When I first had this experience, way, way back, I went over to... Well, I went out for a hamburger and fries, actually. And I went to one of the... What do they call them in California? Bob's Big Boy. And I sat down, I ordered my meal and a cup of coffee. And the waitress had brought over a glass of water. And I was knowing this truth about the Christ of my own being, and I was relaxing in it, hour by hour. And as I sat there knowing that truth, I put my spoon down into my glass of water, took out a couple pieces of ice, and put it in my coffee, and stirred it up so it would cool off a little and I could drink it. I think I was even reading an Infinite Way book as I was sitting there, because at the time I was alone. Well, I read a couple more sentences or a paragraph, and don't you know, pretty soon the waitress came over, smiled at me, and set down in front of me a glass of ice. She had seen from across that restaurant that I had put some ice in my coffee, and she made it her business to bring me a glass of ice. Now, at the time, I noticed. I saw it. Of course, I said thank you, but I noticed it was an act of love coming out of the universe. Now, that's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. After you have a meditation, or if you are able to, in each meditation, realize the nature of Christ as your inner being, and then relax your personal effort, the universe will also pour its love to you, or as he says here, it will offer itself wherever Christhood appears. And I wasn't talking at that time. No one knew what I was doing, but the universe knew, and the universe always offers itself to the Christ. And in fact, let's find that. Let me see, what book is that in? Hang on a minute. Well, I can't find it right now, but it's in one of the Infinite Way books where Joel quotes Kafka, I think it's pronounced, where it says, just remain still, remain solitary, sit at your desk and wait, don't even wait, just become still, and the universe itself will roll in ecstasy, offer itself at your feet, or something like that. So that's the principle. The principle is, when you relax your personal effort in your meditation and realize, have an experience, get the feeling of the Christ as your individual being or consciousness, the universe itself will offer itself to that Christ within you in acts and in ways of love. Now, Christhood or spiritual illumination, that mind which was in Christ Jesus, comes as the grace of God. And no one can receive it by their own efforts or their own labors. Yet, no one can receive it without effort and without labor. Now that's pretty interesting, isn't it? I had a man tell me, Bill, all you have to do is learn to stand up and sit down at the same time. You have to learn how to do things and take no interest whatsoever in the outcome. That's what he's saying here. It won't come by your efforts, only by the grace of God, and yet it won't come without your efforts. So, at some point, all of us are touched by the Spirit, and we know it. Primarily because we wouldn't have stayed on this path this long if we hadn't been touched. And that touching, that feeling, that first experience we had, that is the touch of grace. It means you've been called. And yet after that, it requires effort and labor on your part. And the funny thing is, the effort and labor is put in in order to learn how to be effortless and how to relax. It's very strange, this spiritual path, unlike anything on earth. So he says, then you may know that that individual has been touched by divine grace and that their ascent has begun. Here he talks about somebody that's been brutish or a dictator, somebody that's been evil. For some reason, he has his thoughts turned to good. I love that. That's not on this page here. Let's see. Is it the next one? He talks about, well, we'll get to it. But anyway, this is true for me, because see, I lived on the streets of Los Angeles as a teenager, and I robbed, and I stole, and I cheated, and I did some breaking and enterings, and stealing from cars in the dead of night, and that sort of thing. And that just seems like a whole nother lifetime. How can such a thing be? Here I am today, attempting to allow this Christ to speak through me that others may be awakened to its presence within themselves. Now, how could there be such a turnaround as that? It's almost impossible. Well, because that individual has been touched by grace. And that's the only explanation. Yet after that, I can guarantee you plenty of effort, and labor has been put in over the last 36 years in order to learn how to live effortlessly. I thought this was interesting, where he says, that is why the world today is spiritually on a higher level than any age that has ever existed before now. Now, you wouldn't think that, would you? Looking out at the world today seems like it's at a lower level, but it's not. If you can look back to the ages past and the slavery and the, well, a simple laws that were passed that it was okay for a man to beat his wife and to divorce her and take another one. If you can look at the orphanages where children used to be brutalized and abused, you can see that there's an invisible hand that is moving things in a higher direction. What this really means is that enough of us on earth have released and had these meditations where we release the Christ, that it has begun to leaven the lump. If you take the entire collective consciousness, it's a pretty big mass to transform, isn't it? There's just, 4 billion of us? And take that and multiply it since the earth began, and that consciousness is to be transformed to Christhood. So you can see, it's quite a work that God is involved in, waking everyone up. So we can't judge by appearances. We have to look into the invisible and see the work that's really going on. So when he says something like, the world today is spiritually on a higher level than at any age that has ever existed, unless you can look into the invisible, you're going to think he's crazy. But if you have that quality called spiritual discernment, you're going to see it, and you're going to be saying, yes, I see the hand of God in a lot of places. Understanding the nature of Christ in individual experience, it is first necessary to realize that a release must come in our experience. This would not be as true of the little child as it is of us. A little child being taught the nature of Christ would be more receptive because it had less of that sense of I to overcome. He's really big on this. This was another one of his visions, that enough of us would attain this and we would teach our children so we could have a whole generation brought up in this consciousness And won't that be something? Just something fabulous. But here he's pointing out that it's easier to tell a child of this and have them grasp the principles than it is for you or I. And the reason for that is the child has, what, 4, 5, 6, 7 years of conditioning, and we have 30, 40, 50, 60 years of conditioning, maybe 70 years of conditioning. It's not saying that we can't get free. It's saying it's easier for a child to become like a little child than it is for us. So we are told we must come as little children, not with any thought of tomorrow, but with the realization of nowness. Now all is well. And there is that lack of I-ness. You see, that's why this word release is so important. You hear me say it a lot. We are bound by a universal hypnotism, a universal mesmerism, as it puts it in the chapter The New Horizon in the Infinite Way book. But we're not bound forever, because the Christ says, I am come to set at liberty the captives. That's us. That's those of us that are hypnotized and want to awaken, feel the drive to awaken. And so in each, I'm seeing this a lot. Let me see if I can explain this. I'm just seeing it so much lately. Each of us, take yourself as an individual, and you can say to yourself, I must in each meditation rest and relax, let go of the world, let go of the problem. He says, you can use the words, no answer to this, no answer to that, and drop it. Go within and simply say, thy grace is my sufficiency, or whatever reminds you to rest and relax. And then stay in there until you feel a release. And it really does feel like that. I had a man write me an email the other day who went in great detail about the pain he was in. And by the time I got to the end of that, I was having a hard time because I was, well, I didn't want to miss anything important. And yet, perhaps I would have been just as well to delete the email and go right to work. Anyway, I sat down and I had a hard time getting the pictures out of my mind. And it took me quite a while, probably a half an hour. And then the release came, and it was so beautiful. I felt it just, boom, it just went right off my shoulders. There was a feeling of release, and the Christ was there. I could feel it. The presence just flowed right through me, and I was released. Now, what was I released from? Some person out there? No, this was an email. I don't even know the person's name. I've never met them. Well, I know their name, but I can't pronounce it. It's from another country. Now, was I released from them? No. You know what I was released from. The mesmerism and the hypnotism that entered me by the time I got to the end of that email. I was released from mental images. Mental images dancing inside of me. That's what the release from. Mortal mind. And so, as I said, you can say to yourself, I must in each meditation experience this release by resting in the Christ. That's one. Now you can also say to yourself, I must in my entire life, my complete life here on earth, I must experience a release from the thoughts and things of this world, from the belief in mortality, from the mortal mind existence. So you see, in a little way, in each meditation, we must experience this release. What we are moving towards is a complete release from this world, a complete release from the belief in a mortal life. You see that? There's a little inside release, and there's a huge, complete release. At first, we only go within. We experience a release from mortality for a few moments. That's enough to have a lot of miracles. That's enough for the world to offer its gifts. What we are walking toward is a complete release from the belief in mortality anywhere. I can't even imagine what that's going to bring when I am able to say, it has happened. I have overcome the world. Imagine that. Only Christ is here. I live, yet not I, Christ. Anyway, back to the book. Those are the kind of visions that I have. As we can approach that state of consciousness in the realization, this inherent entity or identity or spiritual nature, which is forever drawing onto itself its own, well, there is the point, he says. There is that within us, within each of us, that is forever drawing onto itself its own. We may call that the Father within. We may call it the Father, the Mother. We may call it God. We may call it the Christ. It is whatever it is. But it is of a nature and character, the purpose of which is to draw onto itself its own. And it can do that best. It does that best in our relaxing from I-ness, from personal effort. And of course, it won't come without personal effort. That personal effort now is not aimed at drawing the good to us, but in drawing out of us the realization of its presence. There's where the effort comes. All right, so what we're seeing, what he's saying, is what I just said. In each of your meditations, there must be a relaxing from I-ness, from mortality. You must experience that released and know, as he says, that God is on the field, or, as I feel, that the Christ, the Spirit, is flooding my being. Now, that won't come without personal effort, but that personal effort is not aimed at drawing good to us, but drawing out of us the realization of its presence. There's where the effort comes in. In other words, the 12 times a day. It's one of the paradoxes of the spiritual life. There are a lot of paradoxes, such as the principle you have to give in order to receive. Supply is not what you get, it's what you give. Well, that's hard to understand when you're down to your last $5 and somebody says you need to give some of that away, or you won't start the flow. You've got to give some of that away. You have got to share. You've got to. If you cling to it, to him that hath, it shall be given. To him that hath not, shall be taken away even that which he hath. And so if you don't give a portion of that $5, if you don't pour it out somewhere, then you're proving that you have not, and even that which you have will be taken away. You only prove you have something by sharing it. How can I prove I have something by hoarding it? I can't. I only prove I have love by giving it. And of course, you can pour out love, you can pour out service, you can pour out prayer, you can pour out furniture, you can pour out time, you can pour out money, you can pour out supplies for somebody or something. There are a lot of ways to pour, but if you don't pour, you're not going to prove you have. Doesn't matter what spiritual principles you know up in your head, if you're not living them through acts of love and service and sharing, well, you're going to prove the other half of the principle. To him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. It's a principle. You pour out into the universe, and the universe pours back, and it's a circle, it's a cycle, it's a flowing. But anyway, back to this. So the personal effort is in the realization of the presence. That's where the effort comes in, 12 times a day. You have to put in the effort. Yes, that's what I was talking about, the paradox. That's one of the paradoxes. You have to give to receive. Another paradox is what he's saying here. You have to find out how to live effortlessly, and the only way you can do that is through your effort. Very strange, this spiritual path. So he says, effort rightly directed is toward the realization of this infinite invisible, that which we call the Father within, or the Christ. There lies the effort. It is like the meeting of a problem. The meeting of a problem is accomplished by the amount of effort that we can bring to relaxing from the effort. Now see, that's that dream I told you about. Here I am flapping my wings, trying to stay up above the world, because I was floating downward, and all of a sudden the presence was there, wrapped around my arm, and it whispered in my ear, "You don't have to work that hard," and gradually floated me up, higher and higher. And so, we need to learn through effort that we can meet a problem from relaxing from effort. Very strange, isn't it? And yet it's true. Maybe that's why it's so hard for the human mind to understand, because we understand overcoming great difficulties and conquering the land. I understand overcoming difficulties in my life that I had to walk through and keep trudging, but I overcame them. This is a whole nother thing. This is a way of standing up and sitting down at the same time. I must use effort to become effortless. Very strange, isn't it? He says it's like realizing this too shall pass. Whatever the name or nature of this is, that it shall pass. Not by any directed efforts of mine, nor by any will, but by virtue of the nothingness of this it, which we have been respecting by fighting. Stand ye still and see the salvation of the Lord. It is very much the effort of effortlessness, the effort of being quiet in the face of storms. It won't pass by while we are fighting it. It won't pass because we are making a reality of it, and we are perpetuating it in our consciousness, because this it has no externalized existence. So there we see, again, the principle that he put in his book of Parenthesis in Eternity, in the chapter Reality and Illusion, where he says no illusion is ever externalized. Very hard, very strange, another strange principle to try to grasp. Yet whatever this is, whatever this problem is that you're facing, it won't leave, it won't pass while you're fighting it. It won't leave because you're making a reality of it by fighting it. You are perpetuating it in your consciousness because it has no externalized existence. It exists only as a mental image in our own thought. And as we realize, as we retire to this inner sanctuary and wait, the storm passes. And so there you have, in that paragraph, the bottom of page 428, the whole secret to the healing principle. That's it. That's the whole secret to it. I've been putting forth effort to become effortless quite a bit since I first picked up this book down in Myrtle Beach. All right. And I've seen results, too. This thing works, and works good. I can tell you that. What thing? this. Retire in your inner sanctuary. Realize that this has no externalized existence. It's only a mental image. Then drop it and wait. You may say, speak, Lord, thy servant heareth, or thy grace is my sufficiency. But wait. Wait until you feel that Christ move in, that presence, that spirit, the Father within. And then you experience that release. And in some way that we know not of, the problem passes. It's really quite fascinating. And the more emotionally involved we are with the problem, the harder it is to do. And that's why you really must write and ask for help. If there's a problem and it's not passing, and you're unable to reach that place where you can wait, well, I know right now there's 10 of us, and there's no reason that you can't send an email to all 10 of us. We should be working on this together now. We should be able to say, yes, let's all work on this. Remember he said we should be to the place in a few months where none of us have any problems of our own? Well, all of us in this, all of these 10 of us that I'm talking about, seem to be just off in the background. And maybe nobody, hey, you know, I just realized maybe nobody has any problems. But I find that hard to believe. I'm thinking everybody's just staying silent because they don't want to look like, well, wow, I'm the only one who still has problems. What's wrong with me? If you want to see the principle work, he has said in the writings over and over and over, there's nothing wrong with reaching out and saying, hey, I need a little help with this. I'm a little bit emotionally involved. I need some help. There's 10 of us here. Why aren't we reaching out for help and saying, look, I have this problem. It won't budge. You can reach out to one or two or all 10. We should be to the place where we can, I mean, we've covered 26 of these chapters. We should be to the place where enough of us can sit down and say, okay, yes, I'll give you some help. Keep me posted. Let me know so I don't keep working on this forever. But I'm going to use some of these 12 times a day to sit down and realize that this problem has no externalized existence. It's a mental image. I'm going to turn within and wait until I experience this release and I feel this Christ. If we're doing that and the experience is real and not just a fantasy, it's going to work. I've seen this work. It's going to work. So we have the opportunity here, if we will not just remain silent, we have the opportunity to have our problems met. And that's all I can do is say that. All right, we learn afterward that it never was a storm outside of us. It was a storm within our being. Outside, all was peaceful and serene, because the neighbors down the street knew nothing about this storm that we were battling. It just didn't exist to them. They weren't inside of us, and that's where the storm is. The sin, this disease, this lack and limitation, that's the only place it has existence is within us. And if we get still enough, quiet enough, acquire the assurance of God's grace, then this will also pass. All right, so there's the principle, the paragraph before that, and that paragraph is all you ever need to know about spiritual healing. You don't need any other thing. All you need to know is right there. Now, if you want to take another step and realize that this that's appearing to you as a mental image is not your mental image. It's impersonal, floating in on that sea of world mind. It's impersonal, it belongs to no one. That's fine too. But not even necessary. All that is necessary is that you realize it has no externalized existence. It's a mental image. And you can't do anything about it. No answer to this. All you can do is turn within and wait. You see, if you've been doing that, practicing those 12 times a day, if you've been doing that since we were on chapter 10 or 12, well, we're now up to chapter 26. That's a lot of weeks of doing that. By now, you should be making that contact within, if you've been faithful with it. So now you can begin to do that as problems are presented, either of your own, or some of our group, or some of the world, someone in the world that asks you to pray for them. But the principles are right here. What we need now is not more principles. We don't need to read 20 more books. For God's sake, don't do that. That time has passed. What we need now is to take the principles we have right here and apply them, live them, until we begin to experience this release and the feeling of, that Christ is on the scene. That's what we should be about right now. So Christhood is a recognition of this truth, the truth that we just read in those two paragraphs. In Burroughs' poem, Waiting, you have the entire secret of Christhood. It was a spirit of tranquility within himself. It was a spirit of peace within himself. And with the attainment of this, he could say, "Wait, and my own shall come to me." Yes, when you are able to do this, if only for a second, you are standing in Christhood. Again, each of us individually, in each meditation, should be practicing waiting until we feel that inner movement, until we know that Christ is here. As well as, in our entire lives, practicing the principles, walking towards that day when we are released completely from mortality. You see, at first, if this happens only for a second, you are released from mortality for that second, and Christ is standing there in your meditation. You will get to the place where it reverses. Honest, all of us will. That place where Christ is standing there almost all of the time. And mortality only shows up once in a while. So, when people say, "Oh, I just trust God to do it," you notice very often that God has a way of not doing it. We're all guilty of that, aren't we? I am. "Oh, you know, God will take care of it. Like God's in my right-hand pocket. God will do it." Well, I don't understand. Why didn't it happen? It's because as human beings, they have no God to do it for them. And that which they are expecting to do it for them has no existence. What they are calling God has no existence. It's a mental concept. A mental concept's not going to fix a mental concept. However, in the realization of this inner divine selfhood, in the finding of oneself at peace in it, is the attainment of that which does draw onto itself everything necessary for its unfoldment, for its development, for its nature, and for its freedom. Sorry, I have a screensaver that keeps coming on. If you hear the sound of an aquarium, it's because I forgot to turn it off before I made this talk. Never mind the fish. Just think of this fish here. Christ. Alright. The key in that paragraph is that you must find yourself at peace in it. Alright, we can really put down this book and every other book now. We can go away from here, and if we never read another one, if they outlaw books, if they ban them all, like the movie or the book Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, I think it was, if they burn them all, you can know within yourself what to do. You have some principles. This entire Kailua study series has given them to you. And the principles are basically these. You are to practice 12 times a day, going within, only to commune, to feel that presence. You are to say whatever it is that allows you to be effortless, that allows you to find yourself at peace in it. Which for Joel was, no answer to this, I'm turning within. And then speak, Lord, thy servant heareth, or thy grace is my sufficiency. And then waiting for 3 to 4 minutes. Waiting, but waiting at peace in it, until he felt it. That's the whole secret to the Kahlua study series. Now, the same thing applies to problems, with the additional knowing that this is not an externalized problem, it's a mental image floating into my mind from that mass collective world thought. It has no power because we know there's no spirit in it. The Christ isn't in it. So we know it has no Christ, it has no power. Christ is power, power is Christ, the only power. So if there's no Christ in it, it has no power. With that, we should be able to release it. Turn within, find oneself at peace in it, in that inner self, that inner Christ, until there's a release. And that release, that feeling of the Christ that brings the peace that passes understanding, or that beautiful, serene, peaceful release, that dissolves the problem. And then we stay in that as long as we can. We continue to have moments in that, and more it comes and announces itself. Sometimes when we're just walking around. And so we walk and we live by that until the day when it lives us. And there you have the whole thing. You can put away the books now and never attend another lecture. But you better go out and prove this in your own life. If you're unable to do it and you get so far away from it that you're forgetting it, well, it's going to be helpful to attend some lectures, be around some other students that you can write that are also living this way. Because as Joel tells us, where two or more are gathered, isn't that the next, or was that the last one? Let's see. That was the last one, wasn't it? Where two or more are gathered. It's stronger when we borrow from each other for a while until we get to the place where it lives us. So there's nothing wrong with, in fact, it's beneficial if you have fellowship with others that are walking this way, if you stay in contact with others that are walking this way, because the world's pressure and the hypnotism have a tendency to pull us down until we've become established in this. All right? And I can tell you there's days when I have to go out there and being amongst them, and I get pulled down too. Shoot, I was driving through New York one time, and the people were so rude I couldn't even believe that. How does anybody live this way? Well, that was all a bunch of mental malpractice on my part, wasn't it? By the end of the day, I had to get quiet and get right again. So, the point I'm making is, yes, you never need to read another book, attend another lecture or class, or hear another talk. You have been given the keys to the kingdom. But they won't do you any good unless you apply them. And to apply them, sometimes you get away from it and you need to be reminded of these principles. So therefore, hanging out with others that are walking this way, having fellowship with others that are on the path, attending the occasional class, all these things are good. All right, until we prove it, so to go back again to the babe in Jerusalem, you will see that it is in the tranquility of the soul that the spiritual awareness develops. Spiritual awareness is another term for a realization of the nothingness of storms or problems. We've read that in other places, haven't we? Where he says you can measure, I think in Beyond Words and Thoughts, he says you can measure your spiritual progress by how much you have overcome the fear, hate, or love of anything in this world. Well, fear and hate we're all right with. Yeah, okay, I can understand that. I'm good with that. If I overcome fear and hate, what do you mean I have to overcome love of anything or anyone in this world? That's where the stickler is, huh? Don't you see you can't love a mental image If you love a mental image, you're just as stuck as if you hate one. It's a mental image. It's a concept. It's not a person. It's not the invisible Christ of them. And that's the only thing God made. But that's for another talk. We better not get off into that now. I just want to point out that spiritual awareness is another term for the inner realization of the nothingness of these storms. Spiritual awareness is another term for a state of being or a state of consciousness which knows the creative principle of this universe is maintaining and sustaining itself. And so, if you do ask yourself in meditation, what is spiritual consciousness, the answer will come. Spiritual consciousness is your awareness that I am within you, that I exist, that there is a presence at the center of your being which lives your life for you. And so I guess I can claim I have spiritual consciousness. All right. Now I wrote here in the margin, there's two parts. Because that's what I just read from him, and that's what I realized while I was reading this. There's two parts to spiritual consciousness. Spiritual consciousness is awareness of the presence of I by the experience of that inner I Christ. And two, the awareness of the nothingness of this world. And having had the experience of this I speaking and melting the world, the thoughts, the images. That's the two parts. That's Christ consciousness right there. Understanding that there's an... No, let's back up. That's Christ consciousness right there. The inner experience of I, Christ, and having seen it dissolve the nothingness of mental images. That's Christ. Spiritual consciousness is your awareness of my presence. Spiritual consciousness is your awareness of the nothingness of the thoughts and things of the world. Yeah, I wrote this, and then I came back and read the next paragraph and saw that he was saying the same thing. Sometimes that's kind of amazing. It surprises me. Spiritual consciousness is your awareness of my peace at the center of your being. Spiritual consciousness is your awareness that my grace is your sufficiency. So the very moment we attain the very first glimpse of God's grace as our sufficiency in all things, we are then in spiritual consciousness, or we have attained a measure of spiritual consciousness. And the more we attain that assurance of God's grace, the less personal effort there is in living human life. That's a wonderful two lines there. The more we attain that assurance of God's grace, what does that mean? It means the more you go within, wait, and experience that release, the less personal effort there is in living your human life. See, that's what I was saying at the beginning of this. The more you experience this in each meditation, that release, the more your entire human life will be lived with less effort, with less person, and it will be lived more and more by Christ, until that day comes when in perfect tranquility there are not only no problems of life, but when the world is coming to us bearing its gifts, showering its glories upon us, and then all of a sudden you say, well, I don't deserve this, and how true that is, because it isn't being brought to you or to me, it's being brought to the Christ, which has been born in the manger of your consciousness. Do we believe this? How many years have we been on this path? Do we really believe there comes a time when there are not only no problem, I mean, when there are no problems anymore, no personal problems? Either he's making this up and lying, or he reached that place. And how did he reach that place? Joel, how did you reach that place? Well, I'm glad you asked. I started out 12 times a day. Yep, that's what he would start you. And so it is. It is because of Christhood, it is because of the sense of tranquility that has come through the realization of a divine presence and a divine power at the heart and center of all individual being. Christhood is Christhood only in proportion as it recognizes Christhood as a universal state of being. Yes, if you were walking around in the state of tranquility and you kept it all to yourself and you couldn't see it as the reality of everyone else walking around, well, then you wouldn't have attained Christhood yet. For Christhood to be Christhood, it has to also recognize itself everywhere. It has to recognize that consciousness is ever all itself. So the very moment you realize, let's see, how much more we got to go here. The very moment you realize God to be the activity of animal, vegetable, mineral, you are in that degree showing forth Christhood. But it is necessary to recognize it as universal being. And recognizing as universal being, do you see what happens in the nature of loving thy enemies? Thy enemies disappear. Now there's one of those bombshells he drops. Right there. How to get rid of your enemies. There's the principle. If you have any enemies, and sometimes we have enemies and it's not our fault. There's misunderstanding and we can see, wow, I had nothing to do with that. That person is way off in their judgment on my motivations. And yet we can't fix them. Well, here he says you can. He says if you will work with this principle, stand in your Christhood by recognizing that Christ is universal being, then your enemies will disappear, if you can know that truth about them. Do you see what happens in the nature of loving thy neighbor as thyself? Even thy neighbor disappears. Uh-oh, there it is. That's that principle I was trying to point out a little while ago, and I said we'd do it some other time. Yes, we're perfectly willing to get rid of the hate and fear of anything in this world, but why would we get rid of loving someone in this world? Well, here he says, do you see what happens in the nature of loving thy neighbor as thyself? Even thy neighbor disappears. Because it all becomes thyself. There are no longer friends and no longer enemies. It is the one self. It is the God self appearing as infinite individuality, as an infinity of people and things. Now, we don't like that. We don't like that. We don't want to give that up. Oh, I'm perfectly willing to give up all this evil and these enemies. Give up my friends? Give up my spouse? Give up my... Now, you know enough to know that it has nothing to do with out here. I'm not talking about going and getting a divorce or a separation or any of that ridiculous stuff. I'm talking about you can't walk in Christhood if you do this halfway. You can't look at the bad only and say, well, that's not there, only Christ is there. And then look at the good and say, oh, but I love her. I love him. Oh, yes, I really like that. Oh, isn't that such a beautiful home? Oh, I love that car. Oh, yes, I'm going to apply this principle of, you're not going to have any healings and you're not going to attain this moment of release unless you can do it on both sides, on all sides of this world. The good and the bad, because they're all mental images. So I have to be willing to look at her and say, she's not there. Now, God, show me what's really there. And I experience that release. I feel the presence. I know the presence is there. All right. There it is, like it or lump it. All right, so I wrote here in the margin, one self. No enemies, no friends, no relatives, no sons, no daughters, no grandchildren, no parents, no neighbors, just one Christ self, the Word made flesh in our midst. And that's the truth. There's only one self. And if you would be a spiritual healer, you're going to have to come to that place. So always lay all your all at the feet of that which was never born. Now, there it is. There's the principle. You can take that one sentence there, and you can take it out of there, and you can apply it right across the board. I don't care if you're looking at an evil person, a good person, if you're looking at someone you love, someone you fear, someone you hate. This principle applies. Always lay your all at the feet of that which was never born. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that wonderful? There's only one thing that was never born, and that's the Christ. So, always lay your all at the feet of that which was never born. Melchizedek was never born and has never died. For Melchizedek is the Spirit of God appearing as a human being, or Christ. And who is that human being? You and me, and he and she. It has to be across the board, ladies and gentlemen. The Spirit of God is that to which every human must bow, must bend, must tithe, must share, must give. In other words, must acknowledge. You must acknowledge. Acknowledge. Every one of us must acknowledge the spiritual identity of each other, and that is our tithe to Melchizedek, just as it was the wise men's gifts to the babe. It is the recognition of spiritual identity. It is the recognition of Christhood. It is the recognition of divine sonship. And I'm telling you right now, all of us in this class, we are of the order of Melchizedek. Take that and meditate on it. And so every time that you give your inner recognition to Christhood anywhere on earth, you are bringing your gifts to the babe, or tithing with Melchizedek. Jesus bore witness to this. This doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. That was his tithing and bringing gifts to his spiritual identity. No, not one of us can be spared or saved the experience of bending the knee to the godhood of each other, to the godhood of this world. And I wrote what we should be doing in between our 12 periods of meditation with eyes open. Yes, this is what you should be doing, what I should be doing, what we should all be doing in those periods when we're not having one of those 12 periods of meditation, in those periods when we're walking around or whatever, at work, at home, shopping, driving. The periods in between those 12 periods of meditation, we should be practicing seeing that spiritual identity everywhere, which he called practicing the presence. The Master told Peter that only spiritual consciousness, the Father within, enabled Peter to recognize Jesus as the Christ. That's where we started this chapter. You have to be able to see into the invisible. Do you know you can't see into the invisible if you're fearing, hating, or loving anything or anyone in this world? You must drop all of that to see behind, into the invisible, their Christ identity. Now, you've said you want to do this. You're on this path. So, swallow it. Get on with it. It must be done. This is called the infinite way. And that's the only way you can see behind into the invisible. So, only the Father within enabled Peter to see the Christ. And so it is that only spiritual consciousness in you will enable you to perceive the Christ in your neighbor. And what is spiritual consciousness? What did he say it was? Two parts. Remember? Let's go back and look. I can try to remember, but I'd rather just read it. All right. Spiritual consciousness is the awareness of I, Christ, within you, and the awareness that of the nothingness of this world, all of it, by having the experience of seeing I, Christ, dissolve the thoughts and things of this world. So, standing in that, that allows you to see the invisible Christ. It allows you to see into the invisible kingdom in your midst. And so it is that only this spiritual consciousness in you will enable you to perceive the Christ in your neighbor. It isn't enough to make an affirmation, and we're all guilty of this. We did this for years, making an affirmation or a statement of truth. Christ is the center of all being. Every man is the child of God. That affirmation may be enough to start you thinking, but it isn't enough to make one's demonstration. It must be spiritual awareness, and it only comes to you through those 12 times a day. There must eventually come an actual state of consciousness, a real one, within you, in which you yourself perceive Christhood, Spirit, as man's real being. Do not, please, do not ever make the mistake of being satisfied with a statement of truth ever again. You're seeing now the depths of this, aren't you? Perhaps what you missed over the years. Perhaps you had a little emotional feeling about a statement in the book, and you closed your eyes and had a little peace of mind, and you felt that you had prayed correctly. You were practicing the infinite way, but you weren't. It was all on the mental level. And now we see the depths that we have to go. This is a developed spiritual consciousness by working with it and working with it and working with it and working with it and then working with it. First, the 12 times a day, then meeting some of these problems, then realizing I've got to go further and give up even the people I love. I don't have to give them up, walk away from them. I have to give up the way I'm seeing them in order to see into the invisible. I won't ever attain this state of consciousness if I'm not willing to give it up across the board. To actually live in this state of consciousness in which I feel that walking peace that passes understanding upon me and look into the invisible while I'm walking around. Now that's Christhood, isn't it? That's the depths we have to go to. So don't be satisfied with that, because the mere fact that Jesus said it won't make it your demonstration. There must come to our consciousness, to our soul, an actual awakening to these truths before these truths can be made evident in our experience. You remember the Master warned us all that those who say Christ, Christ would not enter in? So it is that all those who make these affirmations, regardless of how truthful they are not the ones who will enter or develop the spiritual consciousness. And so those of us in this class are sort of an elite group. I don't mean we're above anybody. That's not what I meant. I mean we're elite in the sense that, well, few there be that find it. If you've even found it, if you're even hearing these talks, you are of a very special group on earth to have found this. It doesn't mean you'll do it this time, but I think, no, strike that. I know. Once you know this truth, it will haunt you. It will bother you until you begin to do it, whether now or later. So we read it with our intellect, but it has not yet become the Christhood of our being until the feel takes place. The awareness, the actual consciousness. When we perceive actually within our own being, yes, thou art the Christ. That is when we perceive it. We're looking into the invisible. Christ is the truth of being. Christ is the real nature. Christ is that center of my being. In that point of recognition, the transition is made. Now he's talking about a transition from man who hates, fears, and loves this world and its things to man who has his being in Christ, isn't he? So always remember that there is for each one of us a point, this transition he's talking about, a time or a place of transition when these intellectually known truths become spiritually discerned consciousness, being, or truth. Yes, somewhere during your 12 times a day, even if it takes 3 years, this will become an actual experience. And then you'll never be satisfied with any other way of life, because when you've experienced this, nothing, nothing compares. Now, to attain it, this spiritual discernment, it is far more necessary that we abide in stillness at the center of our being, 12 times a day for however long it takes, resting back and letting the storm pass, letting these arguments of material sense, letting these material estimates of God, man, and the universe drop away from us. Not fighting them or battling them or trying to change them or exchange them. It's far better to sit back quietly and let them pass from us, in the same way that we sit back and let problems pass. Now, this might not have been true as young students. As young students, it may have been very necessary for us to wrestle with the problem, wrestle with the error, and voice an awful lot of truth. But that time has passed for us. And now it's passed because it's time to experience the inner Christ presence. So on the one hand, you have graduated from that. But on the other hand, you cannot move forward until you have the actual experience. And on the third hand, if you have three hands, the beauty of it is you are going to experience the Christ. The crucifixion of Jesus becomes a way of salvation for us, so that the only crucifixion that comes to us is the crucifixion of personal sense within ourselves. We don't have to go through an outer crucifixion for the world. We merely go through an inner one for ourselves. Now see, crucifixion is not a fun deal, folks. And yet he's saying right there, we must go through it. We must get to the place where we say, okay, I'm ready. Take it all, the good and the bad. We have a personal sense that took 30, 40, 50 years to develop, and now we are trying to crucify it and live a universal sense. And did you know that that's what you were doing? Remember that the degree of our struggle is only the degree of our humanhood opposing our spiritual nature, and for some of us, that's tough. And some of you, some of the 10, have written me how tough it is. We have an awful lot of humanhood to overcome, and it isn't all evil humanhood either. Watch the struggle of some of our very fine human beings to overcome their good humanhood, or their sense of good humanhood, and you see that they may have a harder struggle than we have, because it's not so nice to hold on to one's goodness. At least we who are evil, and that would be me, I told you how I used to live, know enough to know that it would be well to get rid of it. But the good people believe that theirs is good and would like to hold on to it. So, between the two, let's be evil, and of course that brings out a lot of laughter. But it's true. It's easier for the person that's stealing and lying and cheating and knowing it's wrong and feels guilty as heck about it to come to Christ and say, please forgive me, show me how to live, than it is for the person that feels all self-righteous and, why I go to church every Sunday, why I go to temple on Saturday, why I go to the mosque all the time, I bow down 5 times a day. Who are you to tell me what I need? You see how hard it is for them? So if you've been evil like I am, you are blessed. Christhood comes to our individual consciousness as we see less and less of a need for struggle. There it is again. Struggle, battle, fight. All those things, they have to go. We have to apply effort to find the effortless way. And so as we have less and less need for battling in the world, that is another evidence of the degree of Christhood that is unfolding. To each one must come an occasion of using some form of symbology, but it must come as a dictate of the heart. Yes, he's going to go into this now, and I thought it was beautiful. So, in other words, when it comes to an individual as a free state of their own consciousness to place a flower on an altar, or to light a candle or a piece of incense, when it comes to some individual to remove their hat or tip it, take off their shoes or some such ceremony, it must eventually come to an individual as a recognition of that to which they are acknowledging, which is Christhood. There's nothing wrong with if you are going to church or you're going to temple or you're going to the mosque or wherever you go. There's nothing wrong with that. You can apply these principles there too. It never was the place, it's the principle. So, if you don't feel this inner feeling of gratitude and love that just flows out of you and wants to place a flower on an altar or do something, then he says, Christ has not yet come to your heart. Until some moment comes when this tithe is given as a conscious thing, or the gift to the babe, or thou art the Christ, until such time comes as the heart of itself says and compels one to perform an act of purification, of sacrifice, an act of devotion, the Christ has not come, and the letter of truth is dead, and it killeth. Here's another way that you can know that you are experiencing this inner Christ, because this love just bubbles up within you. You can't stop it. You don't even think about it first. It just flows out of you, and you have to do something. Now, that love is the reason why I started these talks 3 years ago. I had to do something. I was feeling this. It had to flow out. It had to. And here I was in my room. What could I give God? What could I give God? God has everything. Yet I had to do something. A flower on an altar was not something I could do, or I would have done it. And so I determined, I know, the one thing God doesn't have myself until I give myself to God. And so I determined that I would put some talks out there that maybe would lead some others to the Christ of their being. That was my act of love. You all have been a part of my act of love. I hope you've enjoyed it. But more than that, I hope he has enjoyed it, for I did it for him. So the letter of truth is of no avail until the heart has yielded, until the soul has paid homage to Christ somewhere, somehow, in someone, in something. To each one of us it comes in a different way. To each one it comes in a different form. To each one the recognition and the symbology may appear in an original and distinctive way, but at some time in every individual's experience, the Christ is born and is recognized by an act of devotion. Let us not forget this. So now when you go to the mystical principles, you know what born that forth. The birth of the Christ is recognized by a voluntary act of devotion, and until that act of devotion has come, the Christ is still the expected Messiah. And people know, folks, you know. I can know by what I watch out there if this has happened to someone or not. This is one of the signs. We have not attained the Christ in our heart until an act of devotion, an act of homage, an act of sacrifice, or an act of love takes place within our being. By that sign you may know that the Christ is born in you. And thank you. So, that was chapter 26, and we have 14 more to go. And I hope you got as much out of that chapter as I did. Basically, we need to continue practicing our 12 times a day until we have the experience. Then we need to move into meeting the problems that we have or that others bring to us with the same practice. And finally, we need to recognize that this Christ must live where we stand, and we must get to the place where we look behind this world into the invisible. And we will. We will. Thank you. God bless you. And I love you. Good night.